Just putting that back to ask the minister.
It is correct.
Well, you're already miles behind your programme, then maybe it does go back and then.
Well, Jack had already suggested popping out.
Well, definitely it has to be changing gear somewhere.
That's what I mean, I mean.
Well, I want to devote my theoretical 10 minutes to a rather abstract argument, which is really sparked off in my mind by Aaron Martin Morris Block's Malinowski lecture, which has been circulated here. But I wrote this up this morning, and I think it does have some bearing on what Maurice Gadelier said yesterday. Though I should emphasize that insofar as I referred to Gadelier's paper, I'm not in fact referring direct to the paper presentation, I'm referring rather explicitly to his own verbal condensation of it last night when he presented it in a particular way, and I was interested in how he presented it, which was slightly different to what the paper is itself. However, although the latter part of my paper is going to be very abstract, I would like to emphasize very strongly that I personally agree entirely with Jack Goody's earlier intervention this morning, when this aspect of the concrete and the abstract came up in terms of Keith's paper, and saying that, you know, I mean, it's the sort of thing that Keith does, which I admire, rather than this highly abstract argument which I'm about to present myself. And I'd finally say that in terms of what's just been going on, that I have absolutely no concern with the subtleties of terminology of Marxism, about which I know very little. However, let's get on with it. As a one-time pupil of Malinowski, and I was a personal pupil of Malinowski, a good deal of what Maurice Gadelier said last night struck me as curiously familiar. After all, the idea that social structures at the empirical level are manifested in reciprocities which, even though they appear to be asymmetrical to the external observer, are viewed as balanced reciprocities by the actors, is at least 50 years old. And the view that such rights and obligations, which are legitimate in the sense that they correspond to the consensus, the consent of those present, the consensus of what is acceptable, the view that such rights and obligations should be viewed as structures of indebtedness, which Gadelier seemed to attribute to me, also goes back to Malinowski and in fact beyond. I'm not saying that there was nothing in Gadelier's presentation of his paper which would not have seemed familiar to Malinowski, but the bits which were relatively new seemed to me of a very doubtful acceptability, and here we're impinging on what was said just now by Tom Bottomore, that we were told, in effect, that while the various idioms or aspects of human action, kinship, religion, politics, economics, and so on, are functionally intermeshed in any particular social context, one such idiom is dominant, and that this dominance can be recognized by inspection, and that we can detect what that dominance is by noting which idiom fulfills the function of production. Now, I personally don't believe that this dominance in this sense, in fact, amounts to anything more than a kind of impressionistic bias on the part of the anthropological or historical observer. But I don't want to argue about that, because, in fact, we've been talking to some extent about that already this afternoon. I would also agree that with what an intervention by Ernest Gellner yesterday, that one of the most striking features of Gadelier's paper, and indeed of his presentation of it, was a suggestion that if we accept the proposition that idiomatic dominance of the kind we've just been talking about can be detected, then very simple pre-capitalist economies are characteristically dominated by kinship, a point which Tom Bottomore apparently agreed with, that there has existed in history a type of pre-capitalist imperialism which was characteristically dominated by religion, and that it is only in, and here comes the crux, that it is only in capitalist societies in which accumulation and saving takes up more work time effort than subsistence, it's only here does the importance of kinship as a role allocation idiom recede into the background. Now this last, I think, is a very interesting proposition. I think it's quite invalid, and I think it can be shown to be invalid, but nevertheless it's something which I would have hoped we would have discussed, but we haven't discussed, and I'm not going to talk about it. Okay. Now then, let's get down to my paper. I had no idea at all that the 1964 foreword of my Political Systems of Highland Burma, which is up there, was going to be circulated with the papers of this conference, or that the book itself would be used to exemplify this, that, or the other thing, as it was in several previous papers, although I was not, when I was not here. Now, I would emphasize that that book was written more than 20 years ago, that it does not represent my present position about any anthropological issue, though it does represent a staging post in my journey to where I am now. In particular, it represents the point at which I began to think with increasing emotional passion that it is meaningless and thoroughly misleading to talk about cultures and societies in the plural, as I noticed that most people around this table have been doing in the last 2 days, including Badelier. The point is that this use of language, which has, of course, a very long tradition and derives, in my case, immediately from Radcliffe Brown, seems to presuppose that there always exists socio-economic political entities on the ground which have discernible boundaries in the manner of modern sovereign states. My own view, on the contrary, is that such bounded socio-political entities are, at the empirical level, something of an historical aberration, though I concede that human beings everywhere think of themselves as belonging to precisely such bounded, discriminated units. There are always people like us who are distinguished from people who are not like us. But it is only very seldom that, at an empirical level, in my view, people like us can be interpreted by an external observer as meaning members of a discriminated social political system on the ground. Now, Radcliffe Brown made the quite explicit assumption that precisely such an interpretation was indeed possible. If an Australian Aborigine informant told him, "We are the Carriera," he stated emphatically that he could infer from this that the Carriera were a tribe with a distinct set of tribal customs different from those of the non-Carriera. The relationships between members of the Carriera tribal system were those of consent, it was the domain of law. Relationships with members of other tribes were not governed by law, but by war. The principle of consent broke down, the domain was that of violence. But he did, it is true, sometimes recognize that since war itself is conducted according to customary conventions, it falls, in a sense, within a domain of law of some sort, and is therefore a special form of reciprocity involving consent. He didn't use precisely this terminology, but I've used the terminology so how it links up with what Gedelia was saying yesterday. Now, my Political Systems of Highland Burma was an attempt to get away from this notion of tribes as bounded systems. It was correspondingly an attempt to get away from the idea that social structures, in the plural, exist as empirical detectable objects or entities in the world out there. I argued, rather, that the structure of a social system in which the actor exists is internalized in the actor's mind as a structure of interrelated concepts which can be, and indeed are necessarily, externalized in all sorts of manifest ways as interaction between man and man and between man and nature. I agree this is a simultaneous process, both the internalization and the externalization. Actor and observer alike can see the structure of the social system in the way individuals behave towards one another, in the way they construct and arrange their buildings, in the way they eat, in the work tasks they perform, and so on. But as we move across the map, and this is the crunch of the thing, different empirical sets of people can manifest essentially the same structure of internalized concepts in quite different ways. And this is true also of history. For example, the continuity of English society is not just that it exists in a particular territory, but that its members, in their own being, believe that there has been some sort of continuity of structure despite changes in the representation of that structure. Structure thus conceived is very abstract. It is a mesh, indeed, of the relations between relations of concepts in the mind. It is, and I will emphasize this, it isn't relations in the mind, it is relations between relations of concepts in the mind. It is, on the face of it, innately conservative, and here I come to Bloch's comment, and I said, started me off, I mean, Leach's theory cannot account for the creation of new concepts, and why it can't do so is argued by Bloch in his essay. Now, how do I reply to that? Well, first of all, I would say that Bloch has misunderstood, or at least misrepresented, my point. It is not the concepts as such which are permanent, but the total structure of relations between the concepts. Secondly, what matters here is what we mean by the distinction same and different, what is changing. And here, my own thinking is strictly topological, and it is here that we get perhaps unbearably abstract. I could have shown what I mean more easily if I had had a blackboard. In topological thinking, let's take diagram A, which we look at, any closed mesh is the same as any other closed mesh. Thus, all these diagrams are topological. Same whether it's a rectangle or a triangle or a circle or a diamond. They are closed systems and they are the same in that sense. But they are all quite different. Those are all topologically the same because they are closed. If, however, we remove a bit of that, or remove a bit of that, remove a bit of that, or those are all different from the previous set, but they are all, again, like one another in that they are open systems. Now, this is the crunch, as it were, of what I'm trying to talk about. What really is this different? I hope the point is clear, really. As long as the system is closed, we are, in model terms, in a Malinowskian functionalist network. Every element in the system is interdependent with every other. You cannot, as it were, bend or move or any part of each of these systems without distorting the whole pattern. But if the system is not closed, then immediately we introduce a degree of freedom. For example, this particular limb can move up and down, it can move there, and the rest of the system is not distorted at all. And this applies to this limb, or every time you have an open system, the thing is bendable, and without introducing distortions into the rest of the structure. So this really is my answer to Bloch. First of all, I take the view that at the level of abstraction at which I'm now talking, the introduction, remember what his question was, Leach's theory cannot account for creation of new concepts. And first of all, I'm saying that it's not a question of so much of introducing new concepts, which can be introduced with great ease, but new structures. And the introduction of new structures is, in fact, very rare, because new structures are so transformable in terms of appearance that you very seldom introduce new structures. But if new structures are in fact introduced, this comes about through some empirical discovery. We reach a point where in the distortions of the original closed systems at which they're not infinitely distortable, because there comes a point at which some empirical observation simply cannot be made to fit even with the most distorted view of the existing pattern of structures. And since Bloch's paper was all about time, and he seemed to think that we have a universal concept of time, I have mentioned here that the concept of time in the theory relating to black holes, which is very much in vogue in this college where a lot of black hole experts are concentrated, is a current example. Time in black hole theory simply has to be a new kind of time. It just cannot be fitted to any classical convention of time. Now, in more mundane affairs, it may well be, I'm not sure of this, but it could be so that the technological discoveries of the 17th and 18th century in the West has possibly introduced new ideas which simply could not be made to fit with the existing epistemes as it was then. However much you distorted the existing complex of structures, the existing conservative system of ideas, there had to be a break because it just couldn't distort that far to take into account these new empirical facts. But even then, and this is perhaps the only use of this model, change does not necessarily involve a revolutionary change either in perceived thinking or in political order. And here I would think it's useful to have this blackboard, and a great book here. You can envisage, supposing we think of this complex as some this closed system, stable, conservative complex as a diagram, and the thing is under tension of bending, but you can't distort it. And then there comes a crack in the system, as it were. At the point at which there comes a crack in the system, the observers will not necessarily notice anything. But once you've got this crack, once this crack has become a break, then in fact the system is completely altered. Because as soon as that crack has become a break, then whether the change has occurred or not, this whole limb is free to move, this whole limb is free to move, and you have got a whole set of breaks or further distortions of the system can then take place which are free. The break will not necessarily be immediately obvious to the other members of the system, that is to say, the other institutions of the system. It is only the consequences of the break, after the distortions have started taking place, namely that the constraints, and here this is where we tie back into what have been talked about before, that once such breaks occur, the constraints which formerly operated to keep the recalcitrant members of the system under control no longer operate. Violence, which in the conservative structure had in fact led to consent, when you get this break taking place, violence can still take place, but it will fail to lead to consent. And this is the I don't know whether anybody can follow this kind of model of making. I said I would talk at a very abstract level, and I've done so, but in my own thinking, this follows on directly from what we were talking about yesterday evening and